Hey everyone, and welcome to the Masters Athlete Podcast. I am your host, Rob Arnold, and I've spent the last 20 years in the exercise physiology field as a strength coach, personal trainer, wellness manager, health coach, and writer. Each week, I will bring you the latest research on injury prevention, strength and conditioning, nutrition, event preparation, and overall exercise physiology to the over 40 crowd of weekend warriors, seasoned triathletes, stay-at-home parents, and CrossFit athletes. Now, let's get on with this week's show. When was the last time that you felt threatened? And not by someone on social media giving you a silly comment to one of your silly posts. But when was the last time you genuinely felt threatened and scared that somebody might hurt you? When was the last time that you really had to defend yourself physically? Whether it's from an attacker or you were just in a situation that you shouldn't have been in. It doesn't happen very often, but it's always good to be aware of how to protect yourself, how to protect your friends, how to protect your family in any given situation from a physical standpoint, because you're not always going to have a weapon with you. So it's always good to know how to defend yourself. I had the great pleasure of speaking to one of the great minds of self-defense in Brian Jones recently. He is a former professor of mine at the University of Louisville when I was in graduate school there, and he's since moved on to a different liberal arts college here in Kentucky. And he has been studying martial arts for over 20 years. He's a third-degree black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu under Carlson Gracie Jr. and a black belt in Judo under Donald Leach. Brian has trained and continues to train with a number of outstanding instructors, including Helio Seneca, Michael O'Donnell, and Aaron Little. In addition to Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and Judo, he has experience with other martial arts, including kickboxing, boxing, wrestling, taekwondo, and kempo. He's even traveled the world into Iceland to train in the traditional Viking grappling art of Glima. In addition to martial arts training, he has extensive education and experience in exercise and fitness. He has an MS and PhD in exercise science from the University of Kentucky. And he's a former state director of the National Strength and Conditioning Association, and now sits on the NSCA Kentucky Advisory Board. He is the North American Director of the International Institute of Martial Arts and Sciences and is an NSCA Certified Strength and Conditioning Specialist, Personal Trainer, Tactical Strength and Conditioning Facilitator, USA Weightlifting Certified Club and Sports Performance Coach, CrossFit Level 1 Coach, World Kettlebell Club, all of the acronyms that you can think of, he's got. He's worked with clients of all types of fitness, martial arts, and combatives, and he serves as a strength and conditioning coach for high school, college, and professional athletes. He has trained military personnel in law enforcement and tactical units in both fitness and defensive tactics. He's somebody that I think has an unbelievable wealth of knowledge in terms of self-defense and martial arts, and bridges the gap between them and exercise science. And again, I had the great pleasure of talking with him. And on today's podcast, we talk in depth in what makes martial arts and self-defense a great tool as we get older. We talk about his martial arts studio that he runs in Frankfort, Kentucky, called Valhalla Academy. And we talk about what makes the master's athlete want to come and train with him at his academy in Frankfurt. It's a great conversation. It's a little bit longer than the usual 20 to 25 minutes, but I think that you're going to get a lot out of this conversation, and you're going to learn a lot, and you're going to want to follow him on all social media aspects, which are in the show notes, for Valhalla Academy and old school Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. But before we get into that, I want to tell you about my sponsor, SimplyFaster.com. This podcast is sponsored by Simply Faster, who's the leader in sports technology for athletes. Simply Faster has the world's best solutions for speed, power, endurance, rehabilitation, and recovery. Perfect for the master's athlete, Simply Faster distributes the K-Box flywheel system, free lap timing, gym aware, and electrical muscle stimulators to get ahead of the competition. To get started, visit simplyfaster.com today. All right, so I am here with Brian Jones, and he is a former professor of mine with University of Louisville grad school. And I wanted to touch base with Brian because he has a really cool martial arts academy in Frankfort, Kentucky. And it a lot of the social media that I see with it, it has a lot of the older guys like myself, the master's athletes. And so before we get started into the interview, Brian, give me a little bit of an introduction of yourself and let me know, you know, what got you started into the martial arts.
Hey, Rob, thanks for having me on the show. I started martial arts when I was 9 years old, doing Taekwondo, then sort of migrated into other arts. I've studied Kempo. I did some collegiate boxing. Then I got into judo and eventually found my way into jiu-jitsu, I'd say back in like 1998, and I've just been doing that ever since. As far as my background academically, I've been involved in the strength conditioning side of things for a while. I was a personal trainer. I got my master's degree in exercise physiology. I was a personal trainer for about 3 years. And then I decided to go back for my PhD. I finished that up, a PhD in exercise science from University of Kentucky. And I've gotten a lot of certifications at this point. I've kind of had them, let them lapse, had them, all that kind of stuff.
But it happens.
Yeah. It's hard to keep up with it. But so I have most of the NSCA certifications, the CSCS, CPT, TSAC, and then ACSM exercises medicine, and some kettlebell certifications. I'm not really sure if they're good anymore. And so some different things. So I've been involved with that for a while, you know, doing coaching, strength coaching for varsity athletes, and then also for personal training for just everyday people at a health club in Lexington, Kentucky.
Awesome. Awesome. Now, I noticed that a lot of your clientele are kind of the over 30 crowd and the master's athletes. And that's obviously something that is a huge interest for myself. Why do you feel that that's kind of the direction that your martial arts academy has gone? What kind of attracts that crowd to you? And are there any type of things that you do to kind of take care of them, so to speak?
To be honest, I don't know why I've got that many people that are older. Maybe it's because they relate to me in some way. Maybe it's because we don't have an MMA program, so I know a lot of younger kids go into that. And also, we're more of a self-defense, we're a traditional Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu academy, teaching less of the sports stuff. And I think that resonates with a lot of the older guys, maybe more than the younger crowd. But we do seem to have our demographic is a little older and actually a little larger than the average gyms that I've been to. And, you know, this has changed over the years. I mean, we used to have a lot more, I guess, younger guys, and we still do to some extent, but it seems like we have a fairly small, pretty tight-knit crew, so people will tend to, when I advertise, I don't do a whole lot of advertising because I like to keep the academy small because this isn't my primary job, and so I want to keep it small, tight, and filled with people that I trust and want to be around. So the idea of creating my Valhalla Academy was to build an environment with people that I actually want to be and train with. Mm-hmm. So I kind of create a gym culture that's positive. Now, the people that come in a lot of times come in on word of mouth, and so I guess older people tend to hang out with older people, and maybe that's why we've gotten a cluster of that group, of that age group. But what I see is that they're just as excited about it as any of the younger guys, and just as enthusiastic. So I don't necessarily cater the program to them, but being a little older myself, I'm 45, I understand the toll that a lot of grappling can take on your body, so I'm able to sort of kind of talk them through how they should balance themselves. Because people, even people in their 40s, have the mindset that they should go full bore because they're still 18 in their minds.
Yeah.
And so sometimes you know, some people you need to sort of bring up to that intensity level, but a lot of these guys you need to kind of calm them down and say, "Hey, man, you're gonna kill yourself."
Oh, I completely understand when, like, you know, you and I were talking before where, you know, I like to roll around with a couple of guys in Louisville area, and my buddy that is, you know, he's jiu-jitsu black belt and taekwondo black belt, and I call him my encyclopedia of martial arts. And he's constantly, when he's punching me in the face, he's telling me, calm down, relax, as he's punching me in the face. And I'm like, I don't know how to relax when you're punching me. So how do you toe that line between the fire breathers wanting to, you know, thinking they're 18 and, you know, but still making it an aggressive workout for them while bringing them down a little bit so they don't hurt themselves?
There's a few ways you can do that. I would much rather have to coach somebody that was already aggressive than try to, it's much easier to bring those people down a notch, seems like, than the process, excuse me, it takes to bring someone who's never had any sort of aggression up to a level. Now, both of those are rewarding.
Yeah.
But in terms of getting these guys that are really just intense, the main thing is I just have to, you can design drills that are not live rolling. So let me say, you can basically limited rules drills that can have the same intensity, but without all the cranking and all that sort of thing. So I have a good progressive system for not only the safety aspect. I mean, we do a lot of break falls to get people comfortable with falling. We use the crash mat a lot. We do things like, you know, where your goal from standing is to either take them down or just push them into the wall.
Sure.
So if you're pushing the wall, then it's very street applicable. You have to be aware of your surroundings. And just trying to not have someone push you in the wall or escape from being held against the wall is a very limited rule set, but it makes it very, very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like if you were to start two people on their knees and give them no other goal but to put the other guy on their back.
Right.
It's just, that's it. There's no submissions.
Yeah.
So there's no resting.
Yeah.
And so the drilling, I think, is important. We do a lot of positional drilling, a lot of limited rules drilling, and that kind of fits in. I think that helps.
And that's one thing that I really like about your academy, and I really wish you were closer to Louisville, but that you seem to do a lot of real life stuff and, like, almost general preparedness stuff to get people prepared for real world scenarios. Whereas, you know, you see a lot of martial arts studios that it's belt testing, it's forms, it's, you know, doing the dances and that's all it is. And, you know, I know somebody that started martial arts training 3 years ago and they've already got their black belt. And it's like, I know firsthand that it takes a little bit longer than 3 years if you do it right to get your black belt. So it's one thing I really like with what you do is real life stuff. So is that kind of something that has been interesting for you for a long time? Or, you know, what's your goal with that as far as your students go?
Well, my goal for my students, first of all, we are, again, a sort of more of a traditional And when I say that, I mean, I'm making the difference between sort of the newer sport style jiu-jitsu and the more traditional fighting style jiu-jitsu that came out in the early 90s, 2000s, when everything was Vale Tudo, no holds barred, MMA, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So we focus on self-defense, but I try to teach things in a way that's, I guess, meta-contextual. So I focus the game on, or our lessons on, techniques that you can use in any situation. So they work perfectly well in tournaments, and we have people that compete, and I support that. I think that competition is a good, healthy outlet for people.
But that's not your goal.
Exactly. It's a training method. I look at it as a stress drill. People want to test themselves. They want to get out in front of people. It's definitely anything that pushes you out of your comfort zone makes you grow.
Mm-hmm.
So I always support competition, but I'll never let the rules of competition dictate our curriculum. And so that's kind of how I look at that. So we do things. We do a lot of takedowns, which a lot of academies don't do. I have a judo background as well, and we have a lot of wrestlers that train here. So we make sure that we get the standing part of it. We include strikes in the normal jiu-jitsu class. So with a gi on, you have gloves. You mm-hmm. learn how to defend against punches, how to close the distance. And then also weapon-based stuff on from time to time. Well, that's not a main focus. It's becoming a little more as people get a little higher in the ranks. I try to incorporate that because a lot of the people that train here carry weapons, for self-defense. And so they need to be able to use those or understand how those weapons are going to interact with a grappling situation. So I think that's an important thing to learn on the mat, not in real life.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I went through a knife training one time, and the guy that was teaching it said, there's only one rule of knife training, and that you're going to get cut. He said, that's going to happen. If you get into a knife situation, you're going to get cut. You just want to minimize the damage. So, yeah, it's good that you do that here with, the blue knives, the rubber knives, and the rubber guns. And
we also have a shock knife that instills fear in people.
Oh, sometimes. No.
Yeah. You can throw that on the mat when two people are grappling just as a free-for-all. It's just there now.
Oh, that's fantastic.
The intensity goes to the roof.
So, you're wearing the old-school jiu-jitsu shirt, and that's something else that you've got going on. Tell me a little bit about that.
So Old School Jiu-Jitsu is a community/brand that I'm building up right now. We have a big Instagram and Facebook following, getting a website together and a YouTube channel. But the focus really is on the martial art as a fighting art, jiu-jitsu as a fighting art, as opposed to a sport, which is the two have become very, very different.
Yeah.
All it takes is for you to watch something from, say, the early 90s when jiu-jitsu was proving itself as a fighting art, and then watch a modern sport competition where guys just sort of sit down and there's no penalty for that. So the things are not mutually exclusive. Some of those people who compete in sport also know how to fight, but what we're trying to do with Paige and with the group of Old School Jiu-Jitsu is to focus on that and try to revive or kind of rally people that still believe in jiu-jitsu as a fighting art. And then we're also trying to promote jiu-jitsu's heritage and lineage in history, which is really interesting. It's how it developed, where it came from, what influenced it. There's a lot of different arts and a lot of different things that aren't widely known about that. And then a final thing is just the self-transformation that comes along with jiu-jitsu. So jiu-jitsu as a journey and a lifestyle, or as something that can change you as a person, physically, mentally, spiritually.
Awesome. Awesome. Now, do you get into like the historical context of Japanese jiu-jitsu and how it migrated to Brazilian, or how do you address that? Because I know that, again, some of the guys that I've worked out with, they're Japanese jiu-jitsu guys, and they poo-poo the Brazilian stuff. But how do you bridge those two worlds?
Well, I like to try to talk about the interaction of all of it. So there is a history that's out there that's documented of how Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu or Gracie Jiu-Jitsu or whatever you'd like to call it that we practice now, it does differ from that Jiu-Jitsu, although there are some Jiu-Jitsu, traditional Japanese Jiu-Jitsu schools that train with live sparring. Some don't. And there's also Judo, which is basically the root art of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, which came from Japanese Jiu-Jitsu schools. And then there's catch wrestling, which influenced it. And then it developed with wrestling and integrated with like Hulls Gracie. And then Carlson Gracie introduced a lot of boxing and brought coaches on. So there's really, it's had a lot of influences and it's changed. And so what I do is to try to just address all that as it's all good. It's not a us versus them. It's not a style versus style. It's just looking at the actual history of it and how it melded into this sort of syncretic style that we have now. And I just find all that stuff fascinating. And we also just on the page just look at warrior culture in general, like the cross-cultural styles and how they're similar. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Greeks were doing things that we're doing right now. There's on basis, the Egyptian hieroglyphics show techniques that still used in wrestling and jiu-jitsu today. Sure. So it's not, this stuff is not new, but it's different. And yeah. So I like to look at each style as its own, focus on jiu-jitsu, because that's where my primary interest lies. But I like to see how it's related to all these other types of grappling as well.
Fantastic. So to back up just a little bit with, you know, the guys that come in here and girls for that matter, if they are a little older, you know, say 30, 35, 40 years old, what kind of precautions do you take with them when they initially come in? They tell you, hey Brian, I've never done jiu-jitsu in my life. I'm 35 years old. I've had a shoulder surgery, I've had a hip surgery, but I want to start rolling around. What kind of, you know, assessments do you give? Do you do any kind of, I don't know, FMS or anything like that? Do you do any kind of assessments with them prior to them rolling around, or what do you do?
No, I have a conversation with them. I don't actually do any assessments, but I have a conversation with them, make sure that they're physically able to do this. If they've been cleared by a doctor, if they have a major health issue, then I'll make sure that their doctor clears them first. And it's one of those things where most of the time the people are healthy. They come, they want to do this. So they'll watch it or they'll know what it is before they get here. Some people have only seen it, and I think that it's very tactile. So sometimes things that you watch, and it doesn't translate. Yeah. You don't realize how heavy someone can be on your diaphragm.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's the panicking.
But and it's not like you're gonna throw in a guy that's coming in. You're gonna throw him in with a black belt and say, "All right, go at it."
Exactly. I mean, we may put them in with a black belt, but the culture, the gym culture we have, is very supportive. And so what I try to do is I give people basic guidelines. I try to get them moving around and doing a little bit of sparring from the beginning. Now, not everybody takes that approach, but I like to put them in the driver's seat and give them some limited rules. Mm-hmm. So even if this
because you still night, focus on real world stuff,
right?
Even from the beginning.
Even if it's their first night, they don't have to go for submissions. I just tell them what you can't do. Right? I don't punch him, don't gouge him, bite him, grab his groin, things like that. Just manipulate their body. And I'd like you to try to put this person on their back. And then if you get stuck between their legs, get out and get your chest on theirs. Mm-hmm. And if you get on your back, put them between their legs. I give them like three rules.
Yeah.
Right? Get on top. Stay out from between their legs. If you're on bottom, put them between your legs. Yeah. And get up.
And then you go. Can work on technique as time goes on.
Because sometimes it's hard to talk about technique if they don't have a reference. So if they've been in the driver's seat, they're more likely to sort of be able to plug this in. So I can say, hey, remember when you kept getting thrown to your back and that guy was smashing your face? You remember that? And they're like, yeah. Well, here's how to stop it.
Yeah, yeah. If you want to stop that from happening, do this.
So you've already had the experience of what it's like to not stop it. And yeah. So you definitely want to pick up on this lesson.
Oh, I like that. I like that. That's good
stuff. And I don't let them, you know, if I put somebody with a black belt, that's actually a lot safer than putting them with another white belt. Because okay. They're going to try to kill each other.
The black belt knows what he's doing.
The black belt knows what he's doing. Our blue belts, whoever I can put them with, and they can sort of...
Control
the intensity of it. So even if the other person's spazzing out, they can just put them on their back
and say easy, calm tiger.
Down, calm down, you know, breathe, and then talk them through.
It's like what I was telling you that my buddy does to me.
Yeah, exactly. So you're like, look, I know you... So if you put somebody on their back and they're starting to panic, you can feel the panic in their body language. You can feel their breathing. And you just take a little bit of weight off of them. Mm-hmm. And you say, look, get on your side and breathe. Don't give up. You got 2 more minutes in the round. Don't be that person that quits in the middle of the round. Breathe. Talk them through it. Let them work their way out into guard. Give them some instruction. And then pass their guard and make them do it again.
Fantastic.
And then at the end, they have the sense of accomplishment.
Yeah. So what kind of things do you do for injury prevention? Like, you know, let's say somebody does get hurt. Are there any kind of, do you kind of set them aside and have them do, you know, some stuff on their own? Because like, say maybe they hurt their shoulder. And or like, for instance, myself, I'm limited when I do stuff because of my neck. So what do you do for someone like that may have some limitations?
Well... For that, I would have, you know, there's always ways to work around an injury. A lot of times people just quit completely, but you don't have to.
Mm-hmm.
You can have them do a modified drill. So just to give from personal experience, about a year and a half ago, I tore my bicep. I was out for a little while doing whatever cardio type thing I could do. And then following that, I was on the mat rolling with my arm tucked in my belt. I don't know if
I think I remember seeing some pictures of that, yeah.
For 8 months. And this was my right arm, my dominant arm. So, and I told everybody not to take it easy on me, just don't pull my arm out of my belt. This was a very difficult time because that was my dominant hand and I got smashed a lot. And I even had people doing...
Did you tear it near the joint?
Yeah, it was a distal rupture, complete.
Ooh,
biceps.
Yeah, okay.
Tear. Ouch. And it was it. But you know, it's one of those things. You work around the injury. There's seldom a time when you have to completely stop. Even the people that get injured, and we do have some injuries because it is a contact sport. I'm not an MD or a physical therapist, but I've been hurt enough over the years
mm-hmm.
to be able to recommend exercises. Now, I always tell them to go see a physician or a physical therapist if they have problems, but I've also got enough knowledge from having my own issues that I can usually give them some sort of corrective exercise and tell them, like, if I can see it in the way they move a lot of times, that they have really tight like say hip flexors are really an issue in jiu-jitsu.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people sit all day, and then jiu-jitsu is a very hip flexed position, so you stay in that. And so like doing that sort of couch stretch or
mm-hmm.
whatever against the wall, that really helps. And so I'll kind of give people, if I see somebody has a really tight shoulder, and I have tight shoulders, I do a warm up. So I one of the things that I think is most important is that you actually keep people warm. And sometimes places don't do that. So if you do a warm up and then you give a lesson where you talk a lot and they just do a few techniques, it
allows them to come back down.
Yes. Yeah. And then when they go to roll full force,
and it doesn't take much, especially for an older person.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which is why I kept getting hurt for the years. Was because I would teach the class and then I would try to train with the guys after, and I realized, hey, they've been moving the whole time and I'm not warm, and they're trying to kill me when I first come back in. So if I'm going to do that, then I'll have another warm-up. So we'll have a second warm-up. Maybe it's some light rounds. We'll do, like, grappling with our eyes closed with somebody out.
Movement prep.
Yeah, just light rolling, movement prep, getting their heart rates and get a sweat going, and then we do our drills.
Yeah.
So making sure that you stay warm. So if there's an open mat, for instance, where the timer's just running or there's no timer running. I just don't stop rolling. I come in, I warm up, and I keep going until I'm done with, you know, water break here for a minute maybe. And because when I cool off, everything locks up. So sure. I gotta pick and choose, and then I decide.
So for you, that's kind of your key to injury prevention, is preventing that up and down body temperature, essentially.
I really think the warm up is one of the things that I've noticed the most. You know, either people don't do a warm up, you know, because nobody wants to do a warm up when you're 18. Warm up.
Yeah.
You know, but now I've grown to love the warm up. Actually, when I lift weights, my warm-up is probably longer than my weight training session.
Yeah, no, I've talked about it on previous podcasts about that, so.
It's definitely something that I encourage people to spend a little more time doing, is focus on warm-up. And also, a proper warm-up, it's not a conditioning session. You shouldn't be teaching people new moves under extreme fatigue.
Yeah.
So, a nice light warm-up, and then I like to use the same movement patterns with the warm up that we're going to be training that day. So if you're going to be doing a hip is, you know, like a bridge and roll escape from mount, then we'll do a lot of bridging and things like that to kind of get the more specific warm up in.
Yeah. Now switching gears to nutrition, do you address that at all with your guys or girls?
I don't, as a matter of course. Usually if they ask me, I'll tell them some things. I'm not a nutritionist. I do know quite a bit about nutrition, but again, I don't pass myself off as things when I'm not. And what I just do is give general advice about things that's available. You know, myself, I follow sort of a modified paleo diet. I don't know if you want to call it paleo or not, but it's mostly just meat, vegetables, fruit, nuts. And
food you're supposed to eat.
Yeah, minimum amount of simple carbohydrates, no sugar, that kind of stuff. And then on the weekends, you know, Saturday I'll blow it out.
Yeah.
And it keeps me, you know, it keeps me at a weight that I'm comfortable with, and it gets my energy levels up. So, I mean, I do have fruit, so I'm not cutting carbs completely out.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll recommend that to people. And also just, you know, things like limiting alcohol consumption, that's really a big one. People are like, how do I lose weight? And I'm like, well, diet is the biggest portion. And I'm like, you know those 3 or 4 beers you drink every night? Stop.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you can do that when you're, 22, 23, but you can't when you're 45.
Well, it's, on a personal note, I've noticed, like, as I've gotten older into my 40s, I can't drink that, my wife and I we split a bottle of wine for dinner, and we'll do that like 2 or 3 nights a week. And it's like, why aren't I losing weight? Well, it's maybe those 2 or 3 bottles of wine that you drink during the week.
Yeah, it's just a little bit. I mean, even if it's at a level that's, you know, not a problem drinking issue, but even a healthful one.
Yeah.
It's still, if you want to actually cut weight, or if you're trying for aesthetics, you're trying to get really, really lean, it's not going to happen if you're drinking.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I've noticed that. I've noticed that for sure. And that's for me, because I eat fairly well, but it's the alcohol that prevents me from getting to where I want to go, for sure. Lastly, I know that we talked about the real world scenarios and stuff like that. And I noticed that you post a lot of videos of outside. A recent one I saw was of you taking on a much larger guy outside, you know, as a real life scenario. How did you get involved with that? And I know that you do a lot of talk with some tactical teams, both military, police, that type of stuff. How did you get involved talking with those tactical units and with that? So.
I've always had an interest in firearms, and it was, I can't remember how many years ago, that somebody talked me into taking, it was a good friend of mine, Aaron Little, taught me into taking a class at Tactical Response in Camden and in Tennessee, and it was just really eye-opening how much there was to the actual shooting process, how there's a skill, everybody thinks they can shoot, they can't. Yeah. Everybody thinks that they can shoot under stress. They can't. and it just really opened my eyes that there was this whole new world, and it was fun. I like guns. You know, I like to shoot. I wanted to carry a gun for self-defense, so I figured if I'm going to carry a tool, I might as well know how to use it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something that people should really consider is just like, you know, you think you know how to fight until you go to a place where they train fighting. Well, you think you know how to shoot until you go to a place where you're trained shooting. And your first shooting class is going to be just as eye-opening as your first boxing class or your first jiu-jitsu class.
Yeah.
So I enjoyed it. I took classes, and I have to admit, I haven't taken any classes that I try to get to the range when I can and train. It's been super busy recently. And I made a lot of contacts to them. Also with my friend Rodney Van Zandt in Laurel County, Kentucky at Iron Sight Defense. He has a really excellent shooting school down there. So I trained with him. And then just getting into that environment, met a lot of people. Friends of mine were combatives trainers for the Army. So I've worked with them on some things. And then I've also done some work with the National Guard, different units. I mean, Fort Knox, there's just a whole bunch of stuff. So it's just, I guess the way I got into it was initially getting into the shooting aspect of it. And then one of those things where common interests, and by virtue of getting old, you know a lot of people.
Yeah.
Your network grows.
Yeah.
And then people are starting to ask you about things. And then so you start to get involved with it. And it's really rewarding to be able to help out. Especially with the police and the military, to go in and train and teach jiu-jitsu with those guys. But I just have always enjoyed it. And I mean, I think everybody should take responsibility for their own personal protection, because there's really no one.
I fully agree.
There's no one out there that's going to protect you. Ultimately, it falls on you.
Yeah.
Protect yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, the cops may be there, but that's after the fact.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I 100% agree that we should all be able to protect ourselves and perform basic maintenance on ourselves and be self-sufficient. So I completely agree.
And protect other people, protect the people that you love, protect other people's people that they love. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
I want trained good guys out there in case my wife's there and I'm not around.
Yeah, yeah, that's good. I like that. Well, awesome. Well, thanks for taking the time to talk to me today. I really appreciate it. I like I said, I really love what you got going on here, and I'm excited to see where you said you're going to move soon.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to see where you move, and you know, if you ever branch to Louisville, let me know.
We'll be in Frankfurt, but a big facility, and I appreciate you having me on the podcast, Rob.
Absolutely.
Pleasure talking to you.
Absolutely. Thanks.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.